I shared with Catherine earlier when I was putting this sermon together. It's all over the place. So it's a confession to everybody. But we'll see if we can pull things together. We'll see if we can do this. And the disparate parts are all over the place. And pull it all in. Do your best. Help me write it. And the other thing is that sometimes, and Proverbs says this many times, you dig a pit, and I do this every Sunday morning when I do a sermon, and then crawl out of it. And a lot of you are saying, is he going to get out of this one? All right, off we go. So given the issues of racial inequality, the struggles of which have come more into focus throughout the pandemic, an article in my alma mater magazine focuses on the subject of American Reconstruction, that period immediately following the Civil War. And sometimes we in the North think that the racist South was solely responsible for the ongoing persecution of African Americans, which was not necessarily the case at all. The cotton trade benefited Northern business interests, as was also true for meager pay to immigrants. Many American businesses were built on the backs of slaves, and thus the so-called abolitionist North was often complicit in maintaining the slave economy. As far as the law was concerned, following the Civil War, the civil rights of African Americans were mandated. However, there was a way of getting around this by denying social rights to African Americans. Following a number of Ku Klux Klan murders of African Americans, the federal system took over when states, North and South, did nothing to prosecute Klansmen, and the higher courts put them in jail. And thus the courts, they appeared to preserve the civil rights of African Americans. However, the courts did not follow the same rules regarding social rights. After all, what would happen if a black man escorted his wife into the same railroad car with all the white women? What would happen if black children were allowed to swim in the same public pools as white children? What would happen if black and brown people moved into our neighborhood? So the result was an immoral, separate but equal, civil and social law, equal civil rights, separate social rights. Any person at the time who argued for equal social rights, along with the equality in that civil arena, would find a hasty end to a career. When it comes to civil justice, getting to the truth, it can be challenging, to say the least. And if we add another layer of social justice on top of civil justice, and then things really can become quite difficult, quite confusing. Just look at the two sides concerning the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, which just concluded with a verdict of not guilty. There are civic rules and structures regarding breaking the law or following the law, but there are also social rules and structures concerned with moral behavior, involving the manner in which we treat other human beings. We hear both sides of the case and wonder which comes down on the side of truth. Those who sat in that jury box for 3.5 days, they may best be able to provide some semblance of what is true and what is not true. I've been an observer in the courtroom. My father was an expert witness, so I spent many, many hours in courtrooms. I've also been a participant on a jury. It's one thing. Therefore, being a bystander, it's quite another being in the arena. Little introduction. Now, the reading from John chapter 18, verses 33 to 38. Then Pilate entered the headquarters again, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate replied, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests, they've handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." Pilate asked him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." And then Pilate says, and this is the final word, "What is truth?" He does it almost in a mocking way. Like the struggles over racial inequality following the Civil War and the jury in the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, Pilate has a dilemma. The empire has given Pilate the task of maintaining civil order in Judea, and therefore he is in a high position as the local representative, the world's greatest power, Rome. The Jewish leaders believe that Jesus is a threat to their authority, so they are advocating capital punishment. In John's gospel, Pilate asks why the Jewish leaders refuse to deal with the case, passing all the responsibility to him. As judge and jury, enjoying this position of power, Pilate begins by asking if Jesus thinks that he is the king of the Jews, which means Pilate is trying to determine if Jesus was a threat to the Jewish leadership by claiming kingship over them. Jesus replies with a question for Pilate. This is a good device of rabbis, by the way. When you're asked a question, answer with a question. "Do you ask this question on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate replies, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation, the chief priests, they've handed you over to me. What have you done to deserve this?" Jesus does not answer this question either, but he says that his kingdom is not of the world. Pilate asks if this still makes him a king, and Jesus replies, "Well, you say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." And so Pilate concludes the discussion by saying, "What is truth?" And finding nothing against him, Pilate puts the life of Jesus in the hands of the mob, who, of course, choose to pardon a thief named Barabbas, condemning Jesus to death. Now, the conversation between Pilate and Jesus, in all probability, never took place. During the time of John's gospel, there were Jews who had converted and Jews who had remained true to traditional Judaism. They were fighting with each other. The writer of John's gospel was a convert, so obviously he had the power to bend the truth in favor of Christianity over Judaism. Those who write the history, you know, they have the power. The so-called truth found in John's gospel and other Christian writings has resulted in the spread, the terrible spread of anti-Semitism. Speaking of what's true, though, there's an alternate historical portrait of Pontius Pilate. The Pontius Pilate of history would not likely have engaged in a conversation with Jesus or anyone else on trial. Historical documents, they reveal that Pilate was busy enough ruling over Judea and given his position of power, would not have given the time of day to converse with Jesus about kingship and truth. Those in power, like Pilate, they want to remain in power, and they will do anything possible to make this happen by rubbing shoulders with powerful people. And that would not be Jesus. If the perceived truth, in fact, goes against a powerful person like Pilate or powerful American Reconstruction political leadership, then authenticity and the truth can be blurred or even deleted. But is it true for us? Are we trapped in protecting our power? Here in America, many of us have every creature comfort imaginable. I know that's true for me, for us. We have houses, we have cars, we have the freedom to travel, take vacations. Yet dare we reveal who we are or what we believe or how we actually perceive things? Are we trapped by our fear of losing our positions of power and authority and control, and with it the continuing path of upward mobility on which we depend to pay the debts on our houses, cars, vacations, credit cards? Must we hide ourselves, masking authenticity, like those in power above us, doing and saying things we do not want to do or do not want to say in order to stay in control? We may speak the truth in love, but if it gets us fired, well, how does that help? I guess that's what is meant by the truth will set you free. As we move through the week towards Thanksgiving, we may consider and we may remember that much of these struggles over social and religious authenticity, that's what motivated the pilgrims to exit England and cross the Atlantic to the promised land they called America, right? And they were the nonconformists. They were the separatists. They refused to compromise their beliefs and give in to the will of either Queen Elizabeth or King James, who were demanding uniformity and allegiance to the throne of England. While the pilgrims, as citizens of England, possessed their civil rights, they were denied their social and religious rights. They agreed to give their civil allegiance to king and queen, but refused to give their social and religious allegiance. And after three of these early Congregationalists were hanged by order of Queen Elizabeth, they left England for Leiden, Holland, where they resided in complete social and religious freedom for the next 20 years. Yet they were still civic citizens of England, and therefore felt that they were aliens in foreign land, as was true of the Israelites in Egypt, the Hebrews also, who were exiled in Babylonia. After these pilgrims left Holland and England, crossing the Atlantic in 1620 on the Mayflower, arriving at Cape Cod, they and their ancestors settled New England and became citizens of America. And thus their social and religious rights matched their civil rights. It should be mentioned that, tragically, it didn't take long for these same early Congregationalists to take positions denying the social and religious rights of others, including Quakers, Baptists, Anglicans, and Catholics. Oops. How often do those who are previously persecuted, when obtaining power, wealth, privilege, end up becoming persecutors themselves? In terms of who we are, those of us with power and those of us without power, when we stand up for the civil, social, religious rights of others, we will often invite criticism and hardships, inviting conflict, struggle, and definitely loss. When we argue for the truth and stake our lives on integrity and authenticity, we may lose our status, money, our careers, worldly possessions, as well as our control and power, which is exactly what happened to those pilgrims. We left everything behind. Yet this also means that we will find a new way of being. That new way of being, kind people, just people, humble people, true people, authentic people. Jesus put it this way. He said, the one who loses his life, he'll find it. Authenticity, though, comes with a price. Well, here, I leave you with a few questions as we prepare for our new members. Here are a few questions that we can ask ourselves on this Thanksgiving Sunday. Am I an authentic person? Do my actions match my loving and forgiving words? What do I really believe? What is the price I am willing to pay for my life? What do I need to do to be true to myself? What will I risk to remain faithful to who I am? What will happen to my life if I just let go? Will the truth set me free? Amen.